Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, it's me, Mike. I run the Sonar Podcast Network, the very one you're listening to right now. I love podcasting and I love the Canadian podcast community. And if you're a podcaster, work in podcasting, or just someone who loves podcasts, you're going to want to listen up. I'm proud to announce that I've been working very hard behind the scenes on an incredible podcasting event in Toronto on June 6th, the Soundwave Summit 2024. And as a Sonar listener, you get 15% off on all tickets with the code SONAR15. An awesome group of podcast companies and creators have banded together to create a space for podcasters and fans to build community, share knowledge, and celebrate indie productions. There will be a ton of informative sessions all day, including talks from Canada Land, Vocal Fry, Black Canadian Creators, Lead Podcasting, and of course, from us, the Sonar Network. In the evening, there will be a showcase of live podcast recordings from Blacklantic, Squirrel Talk, and the Women of Ill Repute. And it's all emceed by the amazingly talented and Survivor-winningest host of Happy to See Me podcast, Erica Kostupinen. Join us for insightful workshops on podcasting, networking with industry pros, drinks, and overall amazing opportunities to meet and collaborate with like-minded podcast lovers. Come for the sessions in the day, the live podcast showcase at night, or better yet, come for the whole thing. Tickets are going fast, so get them now at thesoundwavesummit.com. And don't forget to use the code SONAR15 for 15% off all tickets. That's SONAR15. See you there.
Real Legitimate Apparitions is told one episode after another, but exists all at once. Headphones recommended. Episode 4 starts now.
The following was recorded between November 24th and 25th, 2015.
When I got into my apartment, I kicked off my boots, took off my coat, and I noticed a flyer on the floor that must have been pushed through my mail slot. I threw it on my living room table.
Yeah, things are different and good.
Hey, that's great. Awesome. Difference good.
Ay, caramba.
I dropped the phone on the couch beside me and reached for the flyer that was now on the table in front of me. It was a little folded City of Toronto flyer with the words, "Get outside," with an exclamation mark. I opened it. Inside the flyer, in big black capital letters, was written, "Dylan, I know what is happening to you, and I can explain everything. But first, you have to help me." And cramped in the bottom corner was a phone number. "I know what is happening to you." How could anyone know it was happening? Was it one of the people I visited? Misha or Mrs. Truco? Was it Tom? Was it to a psychiatric ward who was going to come pick me up? And then I had a terrifying thought. Could it be one of the people I'd seen in my weird fits? The mustached man? The child in the bathroom? The second Misha? What's the worst thing that could happen if I called? Hadn't I just done a similar thing with my ex-fiancée? Taken the leap and just called the number? I might as well continue. Right?
Dylan?
Hello?
Before we begin, I'd like you to talk to your sister.
Who is this? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Rachel?
Rachel?
Hi, who's this?
It's me. You've done a great job so far, Rachel. Right now, I'm speaking with Dylan.
Dylan?
Rachel, it's me. Dylan, what's going on?
Yes, he's safe. But he's not where you'd expect.
OK.
okay?
What's going on?
He'd like to ask you if you know what's going on.
Can I talk to him?
I'm here.
Unfortunately, you can't, but I can tell you what he's saying.
Where is Dylan?
Rachel, is this what happened to you earlier?
Dylan would like to know if this is the thing that happened earlier today.
What?
When you called me. You said someone was talking to you about me?
Is this what you were talking about when you called him?
I haven't called him. I haven't told him anything.
What? Rachel, are you safe?
He'd like to know if you're safe.
I'm safe. I'm fine. Where is he?
Where are you?
He'd like to know where you are.
I just got home from Toronto. I'm in Montreal. Dylan, if you can hear me, I'm going to call you right now.
Remember what I told you.
Rachel!
Hello?
Hello, Catherine?
Mom?
Who's calling?
Mom, it's Dylan.
Sorry to bother you, Catherine. I'm calling from the hospital to follow up with you on your first few days at home with little Dylan.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, we're all fine. Dylan's on my knee right now.
Isn't that sweet? And he's healthy?
So far.
Mom, can you hear me?
Dylan would like to know if you can hear him.
Sorry?
Can Dylan hear you?
Oh, I think so. His hearing seems fine.
What year is this?
And finally, Catherine, what year is it?
The year?
I'm sorry to ask, but that's what I'm being told to ask.
Oh, okay. It's 1984.
Thank you so much, Catherine. Have yourself a wonderful day. I'm sure Dylan will grow up to be an incredible person.
Oh, thank you very much.
Do I have your attention?
Who are you?
Great question. I'd like for us to meet.
Why?
We have a lot to discuss.
Were those recorded?
They were. The first call was recorded earlier today, and the second, the day you were born. But you'll notice something very odd about them.
What's that?
You were able to communicate with them.
This is a trick.
You got my message?
The one written on the City of Toronto flyer?
Yes.
Who are you?
What does the message in the flyer say?
Did you write it? How do you know where I live? Fine. Dylan, I know what is happening to you. I can explain everything, but first you have to help me. This is you?
That is me.
You want my help.
And in return, I will explain everything that is happening to you. But we have to meet.
Where do you want to meet?
Check your mailbox.
Lesson 4. Welcome back. So far, we've established that you exist because you are made up of thoughts. These thoughts are created out of your will, which you have no control over. You exist in a four-dimensional universe of space-time, which is ruled by cause and effect, and is predetermined, calculable, and ever-existing. And so, then you might ask, why do I exist? After all, if everything I do is predetermined, why should I need a consciousness at all? The answer might lie in complexity. Your five senses, each with an incredible breadth of information, are sending to your mind a constant stream of stimuli. Your will is constantly pushing you towards different, unclear goals. Your thoughts are constantly flashing through your mind. It's almost as if your consciousness is like a kind of black hole. Information is sucked up into your mind and disappears within the singularity. On the other side of this consciousness black hole, action and thought emerge.
So, yeah, obviously that was the weirdest phone conversation I'd ever had. I didn't know what to think or do, but if there was something in my mailbox, I needed to see what it was. Down in the apartment lobby, I inserted my little mail key into the little slot on my little mailbox, turned it, and opened the door. Inside was an old piece of paper, folded over itself several times. I took it out and turned it over in my hands. It was like an old note that someone had passed in class and never opened. I went to lift at one of the corners to unfold it, then looked over my shoulder. Did I really want to open it in the lobby? Back in the apartment, I sat on the couch and placed the folded note on the living room table. It was hard to believe that only 10 minutes ago I had been sitting right here on the phone with Madison. I opened the note. It was thin paper. The left and bottom edges were torn. On the paper there was some writing, almost like a journal entry. The writing was in faint pencil, unclear, and difficult to read, as if the writer hadn't expected anyone else to read what they wrote. July 8th, 1990. Today we went to Toronto Island. We caught the ferry from the dock and slowly rode the waves towards the island. The best part was looking back at the city. It's a great view. The CN Tower is so tall. Dylan loved the boat and wanted to explore it in its entirety. Kathy had a great time chasing him down, like she was both annoyed with him and also egging him on. We went to the crowded beach and rented this four-wheeled bike, a quadricycle, and pedaled along the paths. We joined a little tour of the Gibraltar Point Lighthouse. Not much to see, really, but it's apparently very old. The guide unlocked this little door and allowed us inside, which he said was really rare. Dylan liked it inside. He kept wanting to climb to the light at the top. I swallowed and my heart started to race. I had a distant memory of going to Toronto Island as a child. I remembered us renting that red quadricycle. I remembered wanting to steer it. This would have been before Rachel was born. Kathy was my mom, and this must have been written by my dad. I turned the paper over and found the word Nathan written, my dad's name. Below this faint, unfinished journal entry was block letters written in black ink, the same that had been written in the City of Toronto flyer. Meet me here at 11 p.m. tomorrow evening. An arrow pointed to the part of the journal entry that said, Gibraltar Point Lighthouse. My phone buzzed. I immediately stood up, jammed my hand into my pocket, and withdrew the phone, expecting, maybe hoping, to see the phone number from the Parks flyer. Instead, I saw a name. Thomas Bracknell.
Hi, Thomas?
Hello.
Thomas, I just...
And I bit my tongue. I had been about to spill everything that had just happened, but the fact that it involved my dad...
What's up, man?
Not much. I just wanted to touch base with you.
Okay.
About that call you got from your sister today.
But maybe holding back this information was going to be harder than I thought.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. How's she doing? You said someone called her?
Yeah.
Yeah, seemed like she was pretty freaked out.
Yeah. She was.
But she's okay now?
I think so.
Good. You okay?
I felt like things were moving a little too fast for me, like I needed to call a timeout. While Thomas was starting to become someone who I was getting used to, I still didn't trust him with anything that I didn't understand. And I definitely didn't understand this.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what was my plan here? Was I going to follow this strange note and meet someone alone on an island in the evening? Someone who apparently had a piece of my dad's journal?
We got a call.
Sorry?
Yeah, we got a call for another session.
Wow. We're like coming in.
Yeah. For tomorrow evening.
For who?
It's on the island.
The island?
Yeah, the Gibraltar Point Lighthouse.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who called you?
I forget their name, but it's at 11 p.m.
We'll have to take the ferry.
No study has ever explained why our consciousness experiences one moment followed by another in succession. Is it because we simply cannot experience our life all at once? Is it because some force is pushing us along our lifeline? Is it because our consciousness exists only in the dimension of time and not of space? Is it because consciousness is trapped inside this cause and effect chain? All of these may be correct, but are probably wrong. Which means that now we're purely into the realm of speculation.
The sun had just finished setting. No snow on the ground, but frost and a thin layer of ice covered every surface. Tom and I had just stepped off the ferry and onto Toronto Island. For those of you not from Toronto, the city is on the shores of one of North America's Great Lakes, Lake Ontario. A couple of kilometers, or about a mile offshore, are a series of closely knit islands, so technically called the Toronto Islands. On some of them are small private residences, on others large public beaches. There's a children's amusement park, a sprawling frisbee golf course. Before the Europeans came colonizing, the islands were inhabited by Canada's native population, most recently the Anishinaabe Nation. To them, these islands, or the peninsula, as it was at the time, was sacred land. In 1787 and 1805, the British bought Toronto in the Toronto Purchase. But the Toronto Islands weren't included in the documents outlining the purchase, so the native people assumed that they could keep the Toronto Islands. But the British figured they were included in the package. Over 200 years later, in 2010, the Canadian government finally paid for the islands they had been occupying for centuries. So that's like, I sell you my coat and you also take my shirt. And I'm like, yo, the shirt's not included, but you take it anyway. Then 200 years later, your great-grandkids send mine an e-transfer for the shirt you stole. Anyway, the British built some garrisons on the islands. In 1809, they built a lighthouse at the southernmost point of the island. In the late 1800s, the island was developed with resort hotels and amusement parks. Large estates were built on the island along with a yacht club and a school. In 1897, a baseball stadium was erected where Babe Ruth hit his first home run into Lake Ontario. No idea who Babe Ruth is, but maybe you heard of this. When the states had their alcohol prohibition, Americans would boat over and have long benders on the island. It was like a northern Las Vegas. In 1937, a small airport was built. And 83 years later, Tom and I were standing on the concrete of the ferry terminal. Cold wind blew around our faces, our bags of equipment at our feet. Today, the island is sleepier than it was back then. I had my phone out and was zooming in on Google Maps to find walking directions to the lighthouse.
On course?
A young man was walking towards Tom and I. He had curly ginger hair and a matching goatee. He looked about 25 years old. He sported a backpack and a black coat with the City of Toronto emblem. He said our name, quietly, as if unsure of what he was saying.
Hello?
Yes?
Hi.
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 And we stood there in silence for a moment with clearly no idea between the three of us what was happening.
My name is Dylan McRae, Chief Leader of Haunt Force.
Thomas Bracknell, Executive Field and Operations Manager.
Hi.
And our awkward trio was silent once more.
How did you hear about Haunt Force?
Blurted out Thomas as if he was completing a survey. The Ginger City of Toronto worker was thrown by this question.
Oh, I don't know. How did you get here?
We took the ferry. How can we help you?
Are you ready?
Ready?
Yes. We're ready.
We are?
What for?
I guess for me to show you where you gotta be.
Yeah, we're ready.
Cool. Follow me.
And the young man turned around and began to walk off down the lamp-lit path leading away from the water and the docked ferry behind us. I picked up two of our equipment bags and followed him. Thomas was at my shoulder.
This is the guy that called you?
I don't think so.
Why is the City of Toronto involved in this?
I don't know. Come on.
Lesson 5. Consciousness and our lifelines. At first, I believed that what was happening to me was a result of being in the same location and space as I had been at another time. I held this knowledge for many years until I began to compile research for these lessons. This is why I taught you the difference between relative and absolute space. My consciousness exists on Earth as it rotates the sun and as the sun rotates the Milky Way and the Milky Way rotates around something else even bigger. I have never occupied the same absolute space. Today, I believe the cause is more to do with our consciousness itself as it travels along our lifeline. I'd like to talk about electricity. An atom is made up of neutrons, a proton, and an electron. Electricity occurs when one atom, atom A, is low on electrons, and so an electron on an adjacent atom, atom B, hops over to fill in the space, which in turn leaves atom B with fewer electrons, and so an electron from atom C hops over. This creates a chain reaction of electrons flowing from atom to atom to fill in the gaps. Electricity, more so than time, flows like a river. This flow is surprisingly slow, a few millimeters per second. The reason your light switches on immediately when you flick the switch is the same reason the water flows out of your tap as soon as you turn the knob. There are already electrons in the wire ready and waiting to hop into the filament of the light. In our bodies, electricity is used to transmit signals. There are tens of billions of neurons in our body, all interconnected, sending electrical signals to each other, sending electrons. Our brain is made up of these neurons closely packed together, each flowing electrical signals to each other in a symphony of electromagnetic waves. Out of this, somehow, our consciousness rises.
We'd been walking for about 20 minutes now, mostly in silence. The moon was out, full. Its cold rays cast shadows beneath the bare trees, which stood solitary every few hundred meters in manicured grass fields. No one was out, which I found a little confusing. I definitely thought some people would be out at 10:30 in the evening, but we were alone. As we walked, Lake Ontario lay to our left, massive, all the way to the horizon. A beam of the cold blue rays of the moon danced on its surface. I traced my eyeline across the horizon, back and forth, and caught a glimpse of the curvature of the Earth.
So, how do you guys know them?
The City of Toronto worker said over his shoulder, and Thomas and I looked at each other and then looked back at him.
Who are you talking about?
Neff.
What's Neff?
Oh, you guys don't know?
It was almost like this guy was bragging. Oh, you don't know these really cool people who are part of Neff? You don't know?
I thought you'd know.
Who are they?
The man in the city shirt looked back at Thomas, and the moonlight caught his face. He smiled.
You know, I'm still trying to figure that out myself.
As we walked, the ecosystem changed. The manicured fields were replaced with thick brush and more trees. We were closer to the water now, and the rocky shore. We came upon a small building on our left with a little sign saying, Artscape, Gibraltar Point. It was a series of small houses making up a little complex. The lights were off inside, no art in sight. And then on our right, I noticed a thin gravel path leading off of the paved route we'd been walking. The smug city worker paused here.
Are you ready?
Yes.
We're going down there?
Down that path, yeah.
And what's down that path?
The lighthouse.
And that is where you expect us to catch ghosts?
That's where you meet them.
Neff?
Come on.
And he disappeared down the path. Okay, so now, for the first time, there was a little voice in my head saying, Dylan, you're not in a controlled environment. You don't know where this path is leading. There isn't anyone around. I looked at Thomas, and I was very proud of myself for thinking to bring him. The Gibraltar Point Lighthouse was built in 1808. It was 52 feet tall and made of stones from the Queenston Quarry, then extended to 82 feet around 32 years later. Beside the structure was a log cabin where the lighthouse keeper lived. Every time a ship approached, the lighthouse keeper would run up the lighthouse and raise a flag to notify the Toronto Harbor officials. At first, the lights on the top of the tower were lit with a candle, then oil lamp in 1832, then coal in 1863, then electric in 1917. John Paul Radelmuller was the Gibraltar Point Lighthouse's first keeper. This guy was born in Germany in 1763 and then worked for a bunch of English nobility, the Duke of Kent, the Duke of Gloucester. In 1799, he moved to Halifax, Nova Scotia, a really happening town in those days, and then to Toronto, or York, as it was called back then. He was appointed the responsibility of the lighthouse in 1809, as soon as it had opened. Now, all of this, so far, is factually 100% true. I've done the research. I've read the Wikipedia. Here's where things get weird, but are still true. On the night of January 2nd, 1815, two British Canadian soldiers were by the lighthouse with John, allegedly all having drinks that John had been brewing in his cabin. A fight broke out. The two soldiers killed John Paul. The two soldiers dragged John's body into the woods. And then, not wanting anyone to discover their murder, they dismembered and buried John's body under the earth of Toronto Island. The York papers later described what had transpired as a barbarous and most inhuman murder. 200 years later, Tom and I walked through the thin gravel path, bags of ghost-catching equipment in hand. The path led to a clearing. In the middle of the clearing, soaring 82 feet into the starlit sky, was the lighthouse. Moonbeams highlighted the hundreds upon hundreds of large stone bricks that made up the structure. At the top, a hexagonal, fenced walkway surrounded a glass and steel dome.
At the base of this lighthouse, an old red arched door was set into the stone. The lighthouse keeper's hut was gone. No light shone from the glass dome. The building stood like a skeleton of what it once was.
All right, we're here,
yelled the city worker. He wasn't saying it to us, he was saying it to someone else, some others. Silence fell over the three of us, and we all turned our heads, looking into the depths of the black forest for a sign or a sound, and then, from an indiscernible direction.
Can you hear it? Feel the spirit?
Okay, pause, okay? So even just listening back to the footage makes me almost freaking die of fear. Or not fear, more like uncomfort. Unexpectedness. So I just want to make it clear for you exactly what this means. Over the course of this journal, you've heard certain references, certain moments of happening in which those words, that tune, has come up.
And I heard something, faintly, as if from far away. A song. The song.
I always kind of heard a song, but only in that house. And it wasn't like it was stuck in my head. It was as if I could really hear it.
I heard the water gushing in the tub and the song erupting as if from nowhere. Have you guys ever heard this song?
What song?
Try me.
Can you hear it? Feel the spirit?
I whipped around and looked into Thomas's eyes, which reflected shock. I looked to the ginger city worker. He looked puzzled. I strained my eyes and stared into the black woods, trying desperately to see where the words came from. But they poured from nowhere in particular.
Can you feel it? Can you hear it? What's next?
The city worker was looking at me questioningly. Thomas was looking at me expectantly.
Can you feel it? Can you hear it? Feel the spirit over the airwaves.
Hello, Dylan.
I spun around, my heart about to jump out of my mouth, and came face to face with a person.
I am Neff.
The person had short black hair, several face piercings, and tattoos that framed their face. They wore a black long jacket.
Hi. Hello. I am the chief leader of Haunt Force.
I know. We've spoken before.
Neff walked away from me and up to Tom.
Who is this?
I am Thomas.
Yeah, this is Thomas, executive field and operations manager of Haunt Force.
Why did you bring him?
I didn't know I should.
I'm an integral part of Haunt Force.
You're supposed to be alone.
They said this to themselves more than to me. They looked at the floor, wondering what they should do. I looked at Thomas, who was shocked to be so unwelcomed.
I trust him.
Neff looked up at me.
You do?
Yes. He doesn't know much, but he's part of this.
They looked at Thomas.
I didn't see this part.
And then looked at Murphy, the city worker, and then to me.
I guess we each have one with us.
Then they shifted, getting back to what they had planned to say.
Before we begin, we have to go somewhere safe. Murphy, can you get us in like we discussed?
This way.
The city worker made his way to the arched red door of the lighthouse. Neff followed him. I picked up our bags and followed. Thomas did the same.
Okay, well, I've only opened this up a few times.
The small red door was bolted shut. The city worker dropped his backpack on the ground and took out a large metal wrench and began to twist off the huge bolts.
We gotta open her up now and then to make sure she's still standing and there's no erosion. They used to do tours of it. I've never actually gone in. You're not supposed to now, but when we started chatting online, Neff, and you asked about it, I figured this is how I could get you in.
A plume of dust flowed out of the darkness.
Flashlight?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Gummy bears.
Yeah.
Tom had taken out a Ziploc bag of his snacks. Today it was gummy bears, as he rifled through his bag for the flashlight.
Here, flashlight.
Thanks.
All right. After me. like entering the belly of Kronos.
I looked to Thomas.
I'm next.
I tried to tell him with a silent pause that I was sorry about all this.
Go ahead. I'll watch your back.
I ducked through the small doorway. I shone the beam of my flashlight into the dark chasm and caught Neff's eyes. They glowed the way a lion's does in the dark at photographers. The air tasted stale, dusty, and of rotting wood. The room was tall, cavernous. My flashlight caught small, cramped stone steps that led upwards in a spiral against the wall. About 50 feet up, the stairs met another level, where wooden beams held up a wooden floor.
Thomas,
said Neff to Thomas, who was standing in the moonlight about to come through the doorway after me.
Yeah?
You and Murphy will stay outside. Keep watch.
I can't come in?
Thomas looked at me as if expecting me to disagree.
Unfortunately not. We need you two to guard the door in case anyone comes in.
Sure.
Please close the door.
And the city worker reached past Tom and swung the heavy metal door in front of him.
During seizure, the regular flow of electricity in the brain is disrupted by sudden synchronized bursts of electricity. A storm of electrical signals going haywire. An overflow of electricity.
The inside of the lighthouse became pitch black, save for the beam coming from my flashlight.
Turn that off.
I paused, and then did. Again, if, like, you could see the transition, it would be dramatic. I couldn't see my hand in front of my face.
Let your eyes adjust.
I waited, suspended in darkness. There was a little light, I noticed, glowing from the wooden floorboards above. Then slowly out of the depths, my surroundings began to reveal themselves. The floor was made of dusty wooden boards, the wall made of the old stone bricks. I took a couple of steps and touched them. They were a little damp. I wondered how long ago it had been that someone had stood right here.
Dylan, I have so much to tell you.
I kept my hand on the stone wall.
So tell me.
I knew your dad. In fact, he sent me here today. He took me here years ago to watch us, you and me, meet. And now it's happening. Nathan found me and helped me, and I promised him that I would help you too. He went through what you're going through, and over his life he found answers, eventually. He found me when I was going through the same thing. It's a lot to wrap your head around, but Dylan, you're not alone. Your dad asked me to explain what I thought was happening to me, so why don't you do the same? Tell me what's going on.
The idea of saying anything to this person right now seemed pretty impossible. I just wanted to listen. I didn't want anything I said to be used against me, to be twisted. But then again, this was the closest thing I'd had to an honest, genuine connection with anyone in a long time.
I've been seeing things. Like, I go on these Haunt Force missions and then sometimes something happens.
Yes.
I have epilepsy, and so I have seizures. And what's been happening recently is like, I feel a seizure coming on, but then it turns into something else. And I see, like, two things at once. I see what was happening before, and then I see something different. And I haven't told anyone about it yet, and it's really freaking confusing.
I have epilepsy, too. So did your dad. And we saw things. We experienced temporal superposition.
Temporal superposition.
When you're in two times at once. It's what you see when you have your movements. That's what they're called. What you see is another time. When consciousness overloads a certain location of your lifeline, it can jump and occupy two times at once. That's what Nathan's theory was anyway. The future and the past and the present exist simultaneously. the same way space does. Like the top and bottom of this lighthouse exist simultaneously. That's kind of the basics of it.
That's going to be really complicated to explain to a psychiatrist.
Yeah, you can't go to a psychiatrist.
So on the phone when I spoke to my sister and my mom...
Yeah, what do you think happened?
I was talking to a different time.
I was. It's a method that your dad came up with. I called your mom, Catherine, the day you were born, and had a movement to our conversation yesterday.
And the same with my sister?
Yes.
They couldn't hear me.
No, because your voice on the phone wasn't part of the movement. Nothing can really travel through time. When you have a movement, you can only see and hear, taste, smell, move like you did another time in your lifeline. So I repeated what you were saying so that in the phone, Catherine and Rachel could hear what you said and respond. I also released your dad's fortune to you. I sent Mrs. Truco to you. I messed with Misha's bathtub and gave her your phone number. I know, it's a lot at once. So, I said I needed your help.
Yeah.
I've kind of been working up to this moment for a long time. I've seen this before, our whole conversation. Tonight, I'm completing the circle. I need you to go into a movement.
What?
Your first purposeful movement.
What will I see?
You will see the other time that your consciousness was in this space, inside this lighthouse. I'll be here with you every step of the way. Do you remember the last time you were here?
Not really. I remember the day vaguely. The one that Dad mentioned in the note. I was super young.
Oh, yeah. That's gonna be good.
But I don't remember coming in here.
Well, I can tell you this. Nothing bad happens in your movement.
What do you mean?
I've seen you make the movement you're about to go on, and it goes off without a hitch. Go ahead.
I can't just do it.
Yes, you can. It's hard work the first time. Can you aim?
No.
It's when you push yourself upward to the future or down to the past.
I can't do that.
It's a skill. You'll get it eventually. What do you do when you've had a movement before?
Like the other times?
Yeah. You say some words, don't you?
Words?
You say some kind of Latin thing.
Oh.
I wanted to know how they knew that. But then I figured that if they've seen this conversation before, this time, or whatever, before, then questioning how they knew anything seemed dumb. And then it occurred to me that if they'd seen this conversation before, and I were to say the Latin words now, maybe that's how they already knew about them. So, I must say them. But then what if I don't say them? If I choose not to say the necromancy thing, then they wouldn't know about it. But then they couldn't have brought it up.
It's a lot to process.
My mind was overloading. It felt like I was being crushed by some huge new reality. So, I allowed the present moment to fill my thoughts. My eyes had really adjusted to the darkness now. The faint moonlight that was peeking through the floorboards above was cascading over all the hundreds upon hundreds of stones that made up the hexagonal walls of the structure. For some reason, the random image floated into my head of the light particles in the room, the photons, kind of rewinding. I imagined a photon that had reached my eye after shooting out of an atom in the brick of the wall behind Neff. Rewinding back further, another photon emerges from the rock atom in the wall, tracking upwards through the room and then through a crack in the floorboards above. And then through the glass that made up the top of the lighthouse, and then through the night air, and up into the sky overlooking the city of Toronto. Up and up until the city is a distant cluster of lights. Up further into the upper atmosphere of the Earth, and then out into the emptiness of space, and then onto the powdery surface of the moon.
Dylan, we don't have time.
This photon is absorbed by an atom on the moon and another emerges, which soars off the surface of the moon and begins its long journey of about 500 seconds back towards the sun.
Oh, I remember this.
What a strange journey those little photons took in a chain reaction to end up in this lighthouse at this moment when Neff was reaching into their pocket to take out a little piece of paper.
All right, try me.
They looked down at the paper, trying to absorb as many photons bouncing off the paper in their hands as they could.
Think something, clearly. Don't tell me. I'll tell you. Light bouncing off the moon and into this lighthouse and off this note and into my eyes. Here.
They handed me the note. On it was written, "Inside Gibraltar Point Lighthouse with Dylan." He was thinking about light bouncing off the moon and into this lighthouse and off of this note and into my eyes. Important numbers he will think of. 5, 8, 2, 3. In that order.
You can keep that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, this is big for me too. Now, it's time for your movement.
Hold up. How did you know what I was thinking?
I don't. I didn't. I won't. All I know is what I wrote on that paper. I know you noticed, but when I took it out, I made sure to look at it carefully so that my past self could see it. You gotta reframe your whole mind here, Dylan. But you have a long time to do that and less time here with me. So, I need your help. You need to go into your movement.
I can't. I can't do it. Not
this
here.
This is good. You're heightened. You're on edge. You're halfway there already.
No, not right now.
I have this.
Neff took out of a pocket of their coat a little black box with two short metal rods and exposed wire.
What's that?
It can trigger a movement.
Look, I don't want to get...
You don't need any... it. You do it on your own.
I do?
You've tried your whole life to avoid seizures. So just let it happen. Focus your consciousness. I'll be here with you. Say the words.
I closed my eyes.
Cerberus, curator of Celestia.
Aim backwards. Think down.
Xenophasmatis, veneer contra me.
I let all of the panic and confusion, the fear, rush into me.
Phasmatis.
Focus it all.
Radix cord.
I focused it.
Causa avita.
And I began to smell metal.
Modo adios suffragia mihi in mius nicotium.
And I began to go hot.
Gratias ac ovo Cerberus.
The smell grew stronger.
Pro tabelli silenti et transio.
And then, out of the air around me.
Gratias ac ovo spasmatis.
I began to hear a faint tune.
Pro iunctio mihi in mius nisus.
I'd like for you to picture in your mind's eye your lifeline. That path you carve through space-time as you live your life. It has a beginning at the bottom when you were born, and it bends from side to side as you traveled or travel or will travel through space. At the same time, it reaches upwards as you move through time. Eventually, it comes to an end when you die or have died or will die. It's short, too short, but it exists all at once. And it represents everywhere and every when you ever will and ever have and ever are. Go and gone and going. In your mind's eye, imagine your lifeline as a copper wire. Imagine your consciousness as electricity flowing along this copper wire. Electrons being sucked forward. This power, this electric force, is you. You climb up your lifeline as you live. Is your entire lifeline filled with your consciousness flowing through it? In the moment behind you in time, is there another or more of your consciousness traveling your lifeline? In the next moment in your future, is your consciousness also already there experiencing your life? Are an indefinable number of yous traveling your lifeline in an endless flow? I hope so. I think so. Because if there was just one of you, one spark of your consciousness traveling along your lifeline, there would be no explanation why you travel along your wire of life at all. I hope so and I think so, because your one solitary spark of consciousness would inevitably have to go out when it reached the end of your life, leaving your lifeline as a dead, stable wire forever. I hope so and I think so because there would be no reason for one spark to begin, just once, out of nowhere. I hope so and I think so because the chance of your single spark of consciousness ever coming across another spark of consciousness traveling along their lifeline would be so infinitely low. If there is, or was, or will be only ever one of you, then when you look into someone else's eyes, you would not be looking into another's consciousness, but only into bone and flesh that are held in place by space-time. Bone and flesh that once were or will be filled with consciousness, but aren't right now. And that thought tears me apart.
And then I opened my eyes. The room was pulsing in and out of focus, and it was brighter than it had been before. I could see Neff standing in the darkness in front of me, while at the same time, light was pouring into the room now. It was day. There was other people here as well. A man in a City of Toronto shirt, but it wasn't Murphy the redhead who was standing outside the door, which was both opened and closed at the same time. It was another man, and he was pointing up at the floor above us. There was a woman I didn't recognize, beside a man I didn't know either. There was another woman to my left, who turned to look at me. It was my mother, smiling at me. She was much younger than I had ever known her. She looked like she did in the photo albums I'd look at when I was a teenager. My dad was also here. He was inspecting the walls of the lighthouse. He was tall and thin. But through all of this, Neff was still standing in front of me, in darkness.
You're okay. I'm right here.
And as they said that, the City of Toronto worker was also speaking as he pointed up at the floor above him, saying something about the types of lights they used through the ages. And then my feet moved step by step. They felt different, more bendy, more limber. I began to walk freely and unconcernedly around the edge of the tall room, with my hand on the stone wall, feeling the stones move beneath my fingers.
You're doing great, Dylan.
And I both heard Neff and didn't, because I was also hearing the tour guide talk about going back outside of the lighthouse. He walked across the room and stepped through the door that was both open and closed into both the sunlight and the moonlight. People followed him out, but then my dad began to walk towards me with a smile on his face. He offered his hand and I took it. It was both larger than mine and the same size. And I watched my mom and the other couple who I didn't know step outside. And then my dad turned to me. I hadn't seen his face in so long. And I remembered this moment all of a sudden. His face was triggering the memory of this exact moment all those years ago. And as he bent down on one knee to come to my height, I both remembered it and watched it happen before me. Like the most powerful deja vu imaginable. And my dad winked at me and said, "Dylan, I don't know how things are going to turn out, but just in case, I'm going to leave this note for you." And he held up a tightly folded piece of paper. "This is for you," he said. "Not right now, but if you come back here in the future, you can find this letter, okay?" My dad looked deep into my eyes as if he was looking at more than just me, the kid in front of him. Like he was searching for something more in my eyes. The current me. The 30-year-old me who was now looking through my 9-year-old eyes into my dad's eyes. And then he held up a second tightly folded note. "And this is for the person who helps you find it, okay? Help them find it." And then my dad reached down and lifted up one corner of one of the wooden floorboards and under it slipped the two folded letters. And then he stood up and said, "Okay, let's go."
He walked towards the open door of the lighthouse. I followed, skipping after him. And I both walked out of the door and also did not, because I ran into Neff, who had been standing in front of the closed door.
Whoa, whoa! I got you.
And they held on to me as I tried to walk through them and through the open door that was also closed, and I felt myself being torn apart, like I was in two places at once, which really, really hurt. And the pulsing got stronger and stronger, and then everything went dark.
When electron-packed molecules are around others low on electrons, they build up electrical pressure. The electromagnetic waves search for the path of least resistance. This is how electricity can jump between wires. During a spark, the atoms in the air itself become conductive as the overflowing electrons spill from atom to atom towards the target. It's my belief that during a seizure, consciousness itself builds up on a segment of the lifeline. During a movement, this built-up consciousness splits and a portion of it jumps backwards or forwards down the lifeline to a location that seems similar to the current one. This is called temporal superposition, and it results in you experiencing two moments of your lifeline simultaneously.
I opened my eyes and saw the darkness of the inside of the lighthouse. Only one lighthouse. It's a lot easier taking life one lighthouse at a time. Neff was standing over me.
It's not an easy thing to go through, and it doesn't get easier.
They held out a hand, and I took it and slowly came to my feet.
You want to show me where that note from your dad is?
I stumbled across the room. My legs felt like lead. I reached the other side of the lighthouse and found the floorboard I had seen my dad put the two letters under.
Under here.
Go on, then.
I reached down and lifted the corner of the plank of wood. It hardly lifted an inch off the dirty cement beneath it. I jammed my fingers underneath and felt around. I felt something under the tip of my finger and pulled it out. It was a piece of tightly folded paper. I held it up to Neff, who nodded.
There should be another one, right? For you?
I said as I stuffed my fingers back under the floorboard.
No. You already have it. I took it out after watching you do this, and I put it in your mailbox.
I reached into my pocket and took out the torn piece of paper I had found in my mailbox yesterday evening.
You found this here?
Years ago, when I was here with your dad. He wanted to know if you were the same as me, the same as him. And so I had a movement to see your movement, to see him putting those letters right there. He was very emotional when I took out the papers. He is very emotional. He's here, right now, just as much as we are. He's standing right there.
And they pointed right beside them, at the empty space.
And he's watching me speak to you.
I stared into the empty space where he was maybe staring right back at me.
Okay. That's it. We're done. That's all I remember.
What?
Yeah. Then Nathan said it was time to leave, so he brought me out of it.
Oh. So what now?
I watched as their confidence started to crumble. They seemed nervous.
You have the note. So now we get out of here, I guess.
Okay.
Wait.
And now they seemed really worried, as if something was going to grab them out of the darkness of this lighthouse.
What?
I've never seen anything beyond this point. Ever.
What do you mean?
Of all the movements I've ever had, of all the parts of my future I've ever seen, this one right here that ended with you and your dad looking at each other, that was the furthest into my future I've ever seen.
Okay.
So I don't know what's going to happen.
And now it was my turn to comfort them.
Hey, it's okay. We'll figure it out together.
I feel like there's a lot of things I have to tell you.
So tell me.
I don't want to mess anything up.
They looked into my eyes, searching for something.
No. Let's go.
Neff went to the shut red door, turned the handle, and tried to push it open.
but it wouldn't budge. They knocked on the door.
Hello? Murphy? We're ready to come out.
And then a voice came from the other side of the door.
Murphy can't open the door right now, Neff.
Tom, open the door.
I'm sorry, Dylan. I can't let you or Neff out.
Why not?
I'm waiting for reinforcements.
Why?
Because thanks to you, Dylan, I found exactly who I've been looking for.
You can follow this story on Instagram and Twitter with @RLAseries. Please consider visiting patreon.com/RLAseries to support the show and reviewing it on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Sonar Network. Sonar!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.